This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. The issue of immigration constantly confounds the U.S., particularly during elections. Perhaps it's because of our tortured origins as a settler colonialist nation that prides itself on being a, quote, melting pot or a nation of immigrants, but whose most welcomed immigrants tended to be white. Writing about Donald Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric and desire to make America great again, history professor Aviva Chomsky makes the case that the U.S. has a long and sordid history of shaping this nation as one populated by white immigrants. Chomsky also implies that there is actually far less distinction between Republicans and Democrats on immigration than we might imagine. Aviva Chomsky is a professor of history and coordinator of Latin American studies at Salem State University in Massachusetts. Her most recent book is called Undocumented: How Immigration Became Illegal, and she just wrote a piece in Tom Dispatch called Is Trump an Aberration? The Dark History of the Nation of Immigrants. Welcome to the program, Aviva Chomsky.
Good morning, Sonali. Great to be on with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, before we get into what's happening today and Trump's rhetoric, let's definitely go back to history. And I know books have been written about this, but when it has come to the beginnings of the U.S. and the emigration of the British and many British who ended up becoming naturalized, at what point did the U.S. actually realize they needed to start making laws to actually shape immigration, to actually, you know, have some sort of standardized process by which somebody becomes a naturalized citizen?
Well, really, the Civil War is an important turning point here. The Civil War, and as a result of the Civil War, the 14th Amendment, because the 14th Amendment created a whole new kind of citizenship. Up until the Civil War, citizenship was based 100% on race. It had nothing to do with where you were born. Immigrants were privileged because immigrants were defined as white people. Only white people could become citizens. Only white people could be citizens. And immigration, the colonizers sought immigration because they were trying to replace the native population with immigrants. And immigrants were defined as white people because only white people could be citizens. So when we say that that we're so welcoming because we're a nation of immigrants, we should remember that for a good part of this country's history, immigration was a way of whitening the country because only white people could be considered immigrants and become citizens. Now, this changes slightly after the Civil War with citizenship by birth, because citizenship by birth creates a new way for people to become citizens by being born here regardless of their race. And this is when Congress suddenly starts a flurry of, oh, well, we can't keep it a white country then unless we also restrict immigration, because people of color are going to be acquiring citizenship by birth, even though they're legally restricted from acquiring citizenship through naturalization. So it's after 1868 that we start seeing immigration restrictions coming in. And those restrictions are, not surprisingly, against non-white immigrants.
How did the U.S. Sort of define Native Americans? Were they seen as simply citizens of their own tribal nations, much as they are today? Or did they sort of ignore the fact that there were indigenous inhabitants here that they just didn't kind of acknowledge?
Well, the thing is that the country has never had a problem with being a country of some citizens and some people who are excluded and have no rights. That has always been the case. So when the British colonists came, their idea was to establish a white country, and they did it essentially through becoming a deportation nation before it was even an independent country. The idea was we deport the native inhabitants of the land in order to form a white country here.
So we deport to further and further west as colonialism and people settled the U.S.?
Exactly. And the deportations of Native Americans continued not only through the reservation system that was created in the 19th century, but even into the 20th century in the 1950s when they start removing people from reservations. And all through the 19th century and into well into the 20th century, the idea of first removing Natives onto reservations in order to free land for white settlement, and then breaking up the reservations with the Dawes Act in the 1860s in order to allow white settlement on those reservations. And I should also mention that when citizenship by birth is passed in 1868, the 14th Amendment, Native Americans are excluded from that. That is, citizenship by birth only applies to immigrants, only applies to non-Native Americans.
So throughout all of this, as you point out in your piece, Mexicans were also a sort of exceptional group of people and immigrants because of their role and their desired role as a source of cheap labor. And of course, this is something that continues through today, remarkably consistent through today as well. Explain for our audience how exactly the U.S. dealt with Mexicans, particularly, of course, given that the border of Mexico crossed many Mexicans who continue, you know, who have been in what is today the U.S. for generations.
So when in 1848, when the United States took 55% of Mexico's territory and made it the United States, they, in theory, granted citizenship to those Mexicans who were living in the territory, but they only defined as Mexicans those Mexicans who were white, because they were the only ones who were eligible to citizenship. So a small number of Mexicans were actually made citizens of the United States. But after this, as the economic development under white corporate auspices, the building of railroads, the building of mines, the building of agriculture in the West and Southwest, is highly dependent on migrant Mexican labor. So when Congress starts to restrict immigration in the 1870s, and they progressively restrict immigration starting in the 1870s, in 1917, the Asiatic Barred Zone prohibits about half of the world's population from coming to the United States, defining people as ineligible to citizenship and defining who is Asian as half the world's population. Nobody from those countries defined as Asia is allowed to immigrate to the United States at all. And by 1924, they actually begin to restrict European immigration as well, of undesirable Europeans. Europeans aren't quite white enough, even though they're still legally defined as white. So, but during this whole period of immigration restriction, which really lasts until the 1960s, Mexicans are never restricted. Mexicans are treated completely differently because they are basically recruited and imported as laborers, especially when immigration is restricted of other people of color to replace them, and then deported. That is, Mexicans are by definition not immigrants, not people who can hope to become citizens, but deportable workers. And this continues to be the case until 1965, when the legal rationale for keeping Mexicans as deportable workers changes. And it changes in the civil rights context when the United States is trying to promote itself as a beacon of multiculturalism and democracy and equal rights for everybody.
It just became too embarrassing, basically, to continue to keep them in their status.
Yes, but what it did is it created a new legal rationale that really didn't change the status very much. That is, it created the legal rationale of illegality. It restricted Mexican migration for the first time, making all of those people who were previously deportable just on the basis of being Mexican, that is, invited to work and then deported. Now they're still invited to work and then deported, but the rationale for deporting them and for not allowing them citizenship is not, oh, well, they're Mexican. Now it's, oh, well, they're illegal. We started calling them illegal.
Right. Wow. So is part of what happened with Mexican labor also just an accident of geography, that because it was easier to allow this cheap source of labor to come in and just send them back across the border, unlike, say, immigrants from China who would have to be flown back to China, that this became the special category for time in the U.S.?
Well, it's a combination of geography and history. I mean, we have the history of U.S. expansionism into Mexico. Even after 1848, we have huge U.S. Corporate investment, mining investment in northern Mexico, capital. We have the U.S. building railroads into Mexico, one of the main purposes of which is to take laborers out of rural villages and bring them into U.S. operations, mining operations, both in northern Mexico and in the southwestern United States. So there's a long history of economic dependence, and I would say U.S. economic dependence on Mexican labor, that evolves over history. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's determined by geography, but geography certainly played a role in people and governments making decisions that, so we have to have some human agency here as well.
Now, Aviva, the idea of the U.S. as a nation of immigrants, something that a lot of liberals like to tout, it seems to be premised on this vague myth that essentially the U.S. has allowed people from various parts of the world to emigrate if they followed the rules, if they did the right paperwork, if they, you know, that meritocracy-based idea. And so today we have a country with the makeup that it has because of these sort of rules that were put in place allowing people to emigrate. But of course, you're pointing out that right from the start, the rules have been skewed very purposefully towards white immigrants who became a white immigrant of European origin or even South American or Latin American origin, of course, has changed over time. But you basically, it's been kind of skewed towards lighter skinned immigrants, right?
Absolutely. And the privileging of immigrants has been part of a project of white supremacy, of bringing in people to replace native populations. If you look, and this privileging of immigrants, because immigrants were defined as white people, and in a country based on privileging white people, privileging immigrants is almost the same as privileging white people. If you look at the territories of the Southwest, for example, in the late 19th and early 20th century, they're desperately seeking European immigration. Immigrants, those considered immigrants, which means Europeans, because they're the only ones who were considered immigrants, because until they had a white majority, they couldn't aspire to statehood. So you have New Mexico and Arizona saying, look how immigrants we have, now we can be a state because now we have more immigrants. So states, racial whitening through state-sponsored immigration, like we've known for a long time that this is characteristic of Latin America's history, that governments are seeking European immigration to try to racially whiten their populations. But exactly the same thing is happening in the United States until quite late in the 20th century, and some could say perhaps even still today.
Right, and so then in the 60s and 70s, when, as you say, in order to sort of become more consistent with our ideal as a nation that respects civil rights, did the US's immigration laws change at least a little bit to where we do have today greater and greater numbers of people of color being able to emigrate, being able to naturalize?
So what happens in 1965, and this is the second great transition point in U.S. immigration history, is the 1965 immigration law. It's a really typical sort of solution that says, oh, well, now we're going to treat everybody equally without recognizing the huge historical and social differences that exist that mean that sometimes treating everybody equally means saying, means not treating people equally. It looks equal on paper, but because of the structural inequalities, it's not really equal. So the 1965 law decided to, instead of prohibiting some immigration, allowing other immigration, giving different racially based quotas to different countries, 1965 makes a blanket statement. We're going to treat every country equally and restrict immigration from every country and allow 20,000 immigrant visas per year from every country. So from a purely abstract standpoint, that might sound like treating people equally. But if you think about it, not every country is equal. Some parts of the world, Europe, for example, are made up of a lot of really tiny little countries, and each one gets its 20,000 per year quota. Other parts of the world, like Asia, where immigration has been prohibited and restricted drastically for hundreds of years, meaning that very few people have been allowed to immigrate, is made up of really big countries with huge populations, China, India, Pakistan, Indonesia, large portions of the world's population, Philippines. All of those countries are also given their 20,000 a year. And Mexico, which has been sending hundreds of thousands of people recruited as workers across the border every year, who are then deported back into Mexico, suddenly all of that becomes illegal. So saying we're going to treat everybody equally in this 1965 regulation, people actually are not treated equally at all. Countries, these abstractions of countries, may be treated equally. But if you're a person from Luxembourg, you can just get on a plane and fill out your form and come. Whereas if you're a person from China, if you're a person from the Philippines, if you're a person from Mexico, you may have to wait an entire lifetime before you could possibly imagine getting a visa.
And of course, interestingly enough, a lot of these smaller European nations have populations with lives that are pretty good and may not need to emigrate. Most people emigrate, leave their homelands because they're looking for a better life. They're trying to survive. They're looking for better economic prospects. If you already have decent economic prospects, you're less likely to emigrate. And so interestingly, ironically, those countries where you had the most sort of desperate need to migrate were the ones that were proportionately restricted the most. So when Trump talks about wanting to make America great again, essentially, is he hearkening back to an America before the 1960s?
Well, I don't really know what Trump himself means when he says all of the crazy things that he says. But I think that the image in the popular mind is definitely that of a white America that he's hearkening back to. But the perplexing thing is that when Clinton and Obama celebrate this this idea of we are a nation of immigrants, and that shows how multicultural and liberal and open we are, that nation of immigrants is a nation that celebrated white immigration, and they need to acknowledge that too.
Not to mention that Obama has been seen as the deporter in chief for having deported more people than any other president in U.S. history.
He absolutely is. And another paradoxical thing that is not generally noted is that so Trump gets up there and says, we're going to build a wall. We're going to deport people. He's not inventing these policies. These policies were first implemented by President Bill Clinton, and they were enthusiastically adopted and increased by President Obama. So it's not like Trump is innovating with these ideas. He's just taking on the ideas that were already implemented by his Democratic predecessors.
So in practical terms, then, it seems as though Democrats pay lip service to immigrants to get their votes, of course, or people who have naturalized but been immigrants recently. But in practice, their policies seem to be very much in line with what Republicans would like to see. Republicans just say it out loud, at least the Trump-style Republicans just say it out loud. If we were to have a fair immigration policy, of course, in a ideal world, we might do away with borders at all, altogether, and allow labor to travel just as freely as capital does. But in the meantime, what could a fair immigration policy look like that actually tries to address the white supremacist past and the kind of unfair and racist immigration policies that this country has been built on?
Well, I have to say that I completely agree with you about doing away with borders. And in many ways, that's not as radical as it seems. That is, the United States did have completely open borders until it started restricting immigration in the 1870s. So it's not and the same thing with other countries. That is, migration is built into our DNA as human beings. We would not have populated the earth if humans hadn't started migrating, practically as soon as they started standing upright. So the fact that humans have populated this planet over tens of thousands of years through migration, with no restrictions on migration until about the last 100 years, should allow us to think with some historical perspective that, well, you know, the world didn't fall apart or explode before we started implementing these borders and immigration restrictions. However, at the same time, I acknowledge that this is not a very very realistic proposal in our current political climate. So I guess I would say that there are some more realistic steps that we could take in the immediate future. One is that I would say that immigrant rights are human rights, and that we need to acknowledge that treating people differently on the basis of arbitrarily assigned statuses is just morally wrong. And we should not pass laws that require us to treat people differently based on arbitrarily assigned statuses. And this is something that I think a lot of Democrats pay lip service to. They say, and I mean, even our founders paid lip service to that, right? They said all men are created equal, but they didn't really believe it. They didn't really mean all. I think that we need to understand that all means all, and that immigrant rights are human rights. I also think that we can look at some of the really harmful border policies that have been put into place over the last 20 years or so and say, well, maybe we can go back. We can dismantle some of these. Now we see how much harm they've caused. We can start dismantling them. Instead, both parties are talking about increasing them, things like building the wall, increasing border enforcement, as they euphemistically call it, militarization. Anti-immigrant policies, we don't need to be multiplying those repressive policies. We could be moving the opposite direction.
Aviva Chomsky, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article in Tom Dispatch about this issue. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Aviva Chomsky is a professor of history and coordinator of Latin American studies at Salem State University in Massachusetts, and her most recent book is Undocumented: How Immigration Became Illegal. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/RUwithSonali.